ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Corbin Middle Madison, the voice of summer, Jim Maxwell for ABC Sport, as we count down Jim's top six Ashes moments. We've got him to bowl us an over of Ashes memories, and we got two to go. So the penultimate one here is amazing Adelaide, going back to 2006, where Shane Warne, Jim, bowled Australia to victory from the most improbable position. After 1,100 runs and only 17 wickets in 4 days of cricket, England started the last day effectively 1 for 100, was the lead in the Test match, and somehow from that position, Australia won the Test and went two up in the best of five.
Anderson bowls, Hussey drives, Australia lead 2-0 as Giles fields a deep extra cover. Hussey 61 not out, Clark 21 not out, and Australia have won by 6 wickets with 3.1 overs to spare. Well, what a performance by Australia.
You look at the scoreboard and you think it must be a timeless test. How did they get so much cricket into that? Two teams scoring over 500 and you got a result? One of the things I do remember is going out with some to a friend's place for dinner, and there were some English supporters at the table. We're all looking ahead to what might happen on the last day with a pretty firm conviction that England would find a way to make sure they didn't lose the game. There was just one English supporter there. He said, "I'm a bit worried about Shane Warne. I just think he could still bowl Australia to victory." Well, he was right.
Warne bowls. That's a googly and he's bowled it. He's dragged it on. It's a wrong end. And Hoggard went for it and is dragged it into his stumps. And England lose their 8th wicket.
You can't say these things too often because you'll be proven wrong. But it was one of the great Australian victories in recent times. Well, it was 20 years ago now, isn't it? But Flem was working with us on the radio. And at that point, if you wanted to leave Adelaide before the evening was up, you had to get a 6:30 flight, otherwise you'd go the next day. Yeah. So we, you know, I'm in the way of the ABC in anticipation of events, and we were booked on that flight. So we were out at the airport when Hussey scored the winning runs. We actually missed real-time coverage of the game. But what an extraordinary performance, even from where they were after bowling England out. To have got the runs as well as speedily as they did.
Yeah, so 168 was needed. They got them inside 33 overs. So Pontini got the first innings 100, got 49, and Michael Hussey 60-odd not out and obviously hit the winning runs and those famous images. And you can hear it in the stump mic where he sort of lets out this scream in utter joy, which sort of comes through before the crowd senses what has happened and that he'd pierced the infield and hit the winning runs. It was, as you said, it was an incredible match given how well England batted to start the match. So essentially 550 on the board. They declared that innings after big hundreds to Paul Collingwood and also Kevin Peterson. So it felt like a big bounce back spot for England after losing the first test in Brisbane. And really from that position, they should have only been one down going to Perth.
Yes, Andrew Flintoff was in charge. I think he did what he could. But the Australians' competitiveness, confidence was such that they're able to somehow stay in the game for such a long time. And you got the impression on the last day, well, probably a number of the Aussie players who thought they could win, but I doubt if anyone was as convinced of that as Shane Warne. He wanted to win every game, and he really did back up his thoughts with his brilliance.
Warne, another quick flat ball, edge caught by Hagrid. Giles got horribly squared up to a quicker ball, which was pushed in. It was a little bit short of a length that had the customary Warne rip.
And it was just another manifestation, as we saw in the previous Ashes series when he took 40 wickets in the losing side. I mean, he was a phenomenon. And the more time goes on, and the more, of course, he's no longer with us too, he will be regarded, recognised, if he wasn't at the time, as one of the phenomenons, freaks of Australian cricket, of the world game.
Yeah.
And that performance on the last day was amazing.
Oh, they're chanting for Warney now down there on the hill as he comes in and bowls to Hoggard, who's yet to score. That goes ripping past his bat.
As you know, in cricket, once the rot steps in, the rot being no runs are scored, there is always the feeling that the next thing that's going to happen is not a boundary but a wicket. And that's the way it moved, including that extraordinary moment when Peterson, who played so well in the first innings, was bowled around his legs.
3 for 73, Warne bowls, and he's bowled him. Peterson's bowled.
Yes.
Trying to sweep, and that's a really, really, really big blow for Australia. My word. And Warne is absolutely delighted with that. Peterson has gone, and England really are in danger here now.
And the relationship between the pair. So obviously they played county cricket together in Hampshire. They had a particular friendship, and for him to get that wicket, as you said, after the big runs for Peterson in the first dig, it feels like, I mean, we're sitting here doing your top six Ashes moments, Jim. You could easily do that with Shane Warne and just pick out his six moments. You mentioned the 40 wickets in the series beforehand. And remembering all of this happened more than a dozen years after the Gatting Ball. So we're so far down the road from when Warney debuted to all of a sudden what he was doing in a match-winning feed here in Adelaide.
Well, we probably can go and have another six of these, I suppose. And you've mentioned one that needs to be talked about somewhere along the line, the Gatting Ball.
Shane Warne, off only two or three paces, he bowls, and Gatting is taken on the pace, bowls! Well, Gatting's still standing there, he can't believe it, but that must have turned a very long way. That is Shane Warne's first delivery in a test match in England. He's comprehensively bowled Mike Gatting.
I mean, everyone knows about the Gatting Ball, don't they?
Correct.
And what about the Peterson Ball,
yeah,
if you think about that test match? Aren't we lucky, yeah, to be sitting here talking about so many wonderful games of test cricket played over a period of time, but more recently,
yeah,
they just keep coming at us.
So just on Warney, if you look at his career, was there a moment, or when was the moment at some stage where you thought that this guy's special? Like, obviously he announces himself on the scene in England with that amazing delivery, which was out of this world. But when did you get the sense that this guy is not just, you know, the goods, he's the greats?
I think the feeling was looming after the game against the West Indies in Melbourne in 92-3, when I think Warne took six for to bowl Australia to victory.
Warne bowls to Richardson. That's a flat delivery, and it's got through him and bowled him. Richardson leaves that kept very, very low indeed as he tried to make the necessary adjustments. He couldn't, and the breakthrough comes. Richardson, bowled Warne, 52.
It was around that time that you thought, this bloke is seriously special. But there was a context to it all, as we started to understand, because of the fella at the other end. I mean, in tandem,
yeah,
there'd be a very powerful argument just looking at their numbers, apart from the effect they had on the game and the opposition, that McGrath and Warne were the greatest pair of bowlers, and well, certainly in the recent history of the game. We can't go all the way back. Certainly in the history of Australian cricket, when those two were on, there were very few teams that could survive the suffocation of their control, their discipline and their skill. Just amazing to watch it.
Ponting's captaincy. So, I mean, he presided over an all-time great team, but they did have that belief, didn't they, that they were winners and they would win from any position. And this is sort of testament to that. And Ricky Ponting and Shane Warne, think about all the great teams they played in and the success they had over their near two-decade career. They both regard this as the win, that the win in Adelaide was their favourite moment. How much of it is Ricky Ponting responsible for as the captain of the team, big first in his 100 and then pretty important 49 on the last day?
Well, like a lot of Australian captains, not only is the man in charge, but he plays by example. That's crucial, I think. Ponting's batting throughout that period, well, throughout his career, was exceptional.
And Ponting settles down over his bat again on 99 not out. Flintoff runs in smoothly past umpire Buckner. He bowls to Ponting, who's forward. There it is, pushing it to the offside. And Ricky Ponting raises his bat, he runs through. He's 100 not out. That's his 33rd Test century, the most by an Australian in Test cricket.
I mean, if you're captain like the old amateur batting at number 8, bowling 2 overs and not scoring any runs, you might have been struggling. But Australia never had that situation as perhaps other teams did in the history of the game. Most of the time, the fellow who was leading the side did a lot by example. It's the way Australian cricket's been for a long while. You pick the team and you pick the captain, whereas historically perhaps other teams have gone the other way around. And it works every now and then, as happened with England in 1981 when Brearley came in, marginal test player, you'd have to say, and his influence got the best out of both of them. So that worked. But most of the time, you need someone who can flag the path, and Ponting was always strong at doing that with an exceptional belief in himself to start with, but in then what his team could do.
It was an amazing series as it panned out. Obviously, a whitewash for Australia. They won all 5. They farewelled some champions at the end of the series with obviously McGrath and Warne here at the SCG along with Justin Langer. But they also farewelled a player midway through the series. So the last man out in Adelaide, as it turns out, before the winning runs were hit, was Damian Martin. And it turned out to be his last test inning.
Went off again, comes in past the umpire and bowls, and Martin gives himself room. He's caught! Caught! At slip. Strauss takes the catch. Freddie Flintoff waves towards the dressing room to say cheerio to Damian Martin.
So by the time it went to Perth in his home city and obviously his home state, he'd retired from the team, which was really a shock, wasn't it, at that particular stage where Australia were 1 win away from retaining the Ashes, and yet they lost a key member of their lineup at that particular stage. What was the feeling around going back to the mid-noughties when all of a sudden that came through that Damian Martin had finished?
Now, it's at this point of these chats that I'm going to ask you the question, because you're from Western Australia. This is like a child that's gone missing and has never been found. Mm-hmm. What on earth happened? Did he drop his brain somewhere? What did he do?
It's one of the great mysteries of Australian cricket, isn't it? Just overnight, that was it, gone, no longer. And I was a right-hander, Jim, and there wasn't many right-handers in WA cricket at that time. So I loved Damian Martin as the way that he was a stylish player and the way he went about it. But it was genuinely shocking, wasn't it, to lose him at that
time? Has he ever owned up to why?
Not that I've seen, at least as to why it was.
So if you're listening, there's a book out there for someone to write.
Bizarre timing, though, wasn't it, in the series for him to leave at that particular stage. And then that what unfolded thereafter. So they go to Perth. I think we all remember that matchup with Monty Panesar bowling to Adam Gilchrist. Yep. It kept going. This was almost like the boulder down the hill. It kept getting worse and the momentum kept building for Australia and against England.
Panesar bowls and he has another go. That's gone. Oh, that's gone longer. Way over deep mid-wicket. 6 more to Gilchrist.
Actually, if you think of... and I do this exercise every now and then, particularly coming into this series. England are about 1 out of 4 coming to Australia. I mean, seriously, their record here most of the time, certainly since the war, if I can go back to that, has been pretty ordinary. Hutton 54-5 with Tyson, Illingworth 70-71, Gadding 86-7, the Cook and Strauss show with their batting in 10-11. But they're the four. Most of the others, they've been mashed. Comparatively, the way Australia have performed in England, okay, they haven't won since 2001, but they're always competitive. But I don't know what happens to England. Is it the sunshine? Is it the jet lag? What gets them when they come to Australia?
It's bizarre, isn't it? We'll see what we get this time around from England. Just on that Australian team, it felt like they were pricked a little bit, weren't they, from 2005. They had a point to prove back at home in the summer of 06-07. It felt like we got them at their fearsome best. That was as dominant an Australian series, perhaps, that we've seen. I mean, we can talk forever about the best Australian teams of all time and probably the side that preceded them in the early 2000s, the Invincibles, obviously, going back then. But it felt like that was as fearsome a group that Australia had, with a point to prove, with some all-time great players, as dominant a series, I think, that we've seen from an Australian outfit. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, yes. I think... despite the fact that there is a British bulldog, the border collie is more of a dog off a leash in Australia than the bulldog is against Australia in England.
I like it, Jim. I like it. It's a good line on the border collie. All right, that's number 2 on Jim's list. So we've got these over of memories. We're 6 down to 1, which means we just have Jim's top Ashes memories still to come. Keep it locked right here on ABC Sport.
Next up, Jim's number one Ashes moment. It happened 2 decades ago with England claiming an incredible series win.
I can remember at the end of the game, I was chatting to Rod Marsh, who I think had just come out of a period of being involved with English Academy and the rest of it. And I said, what did you think? Are we going to win this series 5-0? He said, I wouldn't discount England. Well, history proves that he was spot on, but not in the way that we thought, because there's no doubt there are all sorts of trigger moments in series. And this one was probably one of the biggest trigger moments in Ashes history, when McGrath trod on the ball before the start of the test match.
That's as good as cricket gets. Jim and Corbin will relive it here on the Cricket Podcast feed. Stay tuned.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.